Hey, hello everybody. Welcome to the energy storage panel. We're going to have a good time this morning. Glad you're all here. Let me introduce myself. I'm Tom Malooly. I'm an energy regulatory lawyer at Foley & Lardner. I've been doing energy law stuff for about 20 years, over 20 years. And the really interesting thing to me about energy storage is that it changes everything. Everything that system designers, planners, the grid that we inherited, the coal plants, the nuclear plants, all the plants, everything about our electric system that was handed down to us from generations previous was all based on the notion that we had to have enough generation and enough transmission and enough distribution to get it to the load that needed it at the very same time, and we had to keep those things in balance. And everything was built off that basic necessity, that basic sort of physics. Storage changes that whole model. The potential for it is unlimited. Instead of having to produce it at the moment it's needed, we can actually produce energy when it's cheaper, store it, and use it when it's more expensive. And that's what we're talking about today. So the way we're going to organize our panel today, we'll do some quick introductions of all our wonderful panelists. Then we'll focus for a while on decisions that people are making today about where and why and how to put in storage projects. That's going on right now. Then we'll have a little bit of time to talk about policy issues, the future, what's getting in the way of having storage adopted more widely, more quickly. And then finally, we'll have time at the end for questions. We started on time. We'll end on time. We will have time for questions. So be sure that you have anything that's in your mind ready to go once we get to that point. So I'm Tom Malooly. I'm the start, and I will hand it over. Let's see. Yeah, Steve, you want to go?
Steve Dambeck. Can everybody hear me clearly here? Yes? Good. My name is Steve Dambeck. I work for Arch Electric in Plymouth, Wisconsin. My primary role is helping the company integrate the new battery technologies into our existing solar offerings. We've been a solar installer for the better part of 15 years, and just like everybody else in this business, the battery storage options are now becoming publicly a big deal. People are asking for the stuff, and they come to us and say, what does it do? What does it cost? What's the best thing out there? I'd like to say that I was encouraged on my drive in here from Milwaukee this morning to see so many electric vehicles on the freeway. A couple of Teslas passed me up on the way in. That was something just a few years ago people said was impossible to do. The electric vehicles were kind of pushed off as something that some rich eccentrics might use to go 10 or 20 miles to the grocery store and back, and that's the limit of the cars, and here's one zooming past me on the freeway. And the encouraging thing about that to me is that has done more to educate the public on the capacity and the capabilities of this stuff than all the marketing of all the companies I've ever worked for. I've had my head down in the engineering department of energy storage and renewable energy equipment for the better part of the last decade. So it's second nature to me, and I have to remember every time I talk to a new customer that this might be the very first time they've ever heard of any of this stuff. It's an educational process, and having successes like Tesla and all of the other EVs and other equipment out there using storage, that's helping educate the public in a way that that we can't do on our own quite as well. I'm proud to be a part of this industry, and I'm proud to be here today.
Hey, Steve. Kate?
Yeah, my name is Kate Howling. I'm a storage engineer with Invenergy. I've been with Invenergy for 5 years. So for the first 3 years, I focused on operations, electrical engineering part of our company, operating our existing energy storage assets that we're operating on the grid. And for the past 2 years, I've been on the development side, finding new business opportunities for energy storage, grid-scale energy storage, and bringing that through to execution. And for those who don't know, Invenergy is a privately held wind, solar, storage developer, owner, operator, operating worldwide with a specific focus, of course, in North America.
Thanks, Kate. Tim?
Tim Wilson. I am an energy and engineering manager at Gunderson Health System. I'm actually a lean manufacturing guy. I did that for about 20 years. About a year and a half ago, I kind of made a career change and moved into healthcare and energy, and it's interesting the overlap you get from manufacturing, trying to drive out waste, and kind of working in healthcare and energy, and really it's the same thing, trying to drive out waste in the system. So yeah, we've got a battery that we just put into place, and we'll talk about that going forward.
Excellent, Tim. Thanks. So before we get into decisions people are making today, we thought it would be good to just start with some basics of what actually is energy storage and how does it work. Kate's going to walk us through that.
All right, so a picture's worth a thousand words, so we thought this would be a good way to start. So before we get in, I wanted to talk about, you know, when we mention energy storage and batteries, what are we even talking about? So there's lots of different types of batteries or energy storage. So like on the mechanical side, for example, there's compressed air energy storage, even pumped hydro, flywheels. You can even have thermal energy storage by, you know, melting ice and then freezing again and using that to store your energy. But what we wanted to focus on today is electrochemical energy storage or batteries, specifically lithium-ion batteries. So for those who are less familiar with how a battery works, I find a helpful illustration is a tank of water. So if you have, you know, a big tank of water, think of that as your battery. You can store a lot of electrons in that tank of water. If you have a smaller tank, you can hold less water. If you have a smaller battery, you can hold fewer electrons. We measure that in megawatt hours or kilowatt hours, which is a unit of measurement for energy. Another important unit of measurement in batteries is power. So if you look at the tank, we also have a faucet. If you open that faucet all the way, a lot of water is going to come out. That's equivalent to the power or kilowatt or megawatt of a battery. That's really driven by your inverter, and I'll show some pictures soon that will help illustrate that as well. So you could see that if you had a really, really big tank and a really, really small faucet, even if you open that faucet all the way, that tank is going to drain really slow. On the flip side, if you had a really small tank and you had a really big faucet, that tank is going to drain really quickly. It's the same way with batteries. So another way to illustrate this is on the left-hand side, we have our inverters. Remember, that's power. That's like the faucet for your tank. On the right-hand side, we have our batteries. That's the energy. That's the size of the tank of water. That's what's holding your electrons. Behind the same exact inverter, you can have a little bit of batteries or you can have a lot of batteries. That really is measuring your energy, as we talked about. That's really signifying kind of how long is your battery going to last, right? So how long can you charge that for and how long can you discharge that for? The design of a battery is very flexible. As you can see, you can have short duration batteries, so you can have like 30-minute batteries. That's like a quick punch of energy. You could draw energy really quickly from the grid. Or you can have a longer duration, like 4 hours. 4 hours on the grid scale side of things is that's kind of what the market's sort of standardizing around. Like right now, it's a little bit of a sweet spot. But you could see behind the same inverter, all you're doing is adding more batteries. It's highly scalable. It's highly flexible. To get into some detailed components, there's a few that I really want to point out here. So this is a snapshot of what a battery system is. We already talked about the inverter, which is on the left-hand side. That's like your faucet. It's the power. And what makes up your battery? So let's start small. In the lower right-hand side is a module. That's like if you envision your cell phone, you have a battery cell in your cell phone. That's what's powering it. Imagine a ton of those cells just wired together in a box and then soldered together. That's like a battery module. Now, when you stack these modules on top of each other and you wire them together, you get a battery rack. And what's on top of every battery rack is what's called a battery management system or a BMS. That's the brains of your battery system. So that's what's enforcing all the operating parameters. That's what's making sure your battery's not getting too hot. It's what's making sure your battery's in the right voltage range, the right state of charge, has the proper amount of current flowing through it. So that's what's really enforcing the operations of your battery. So, again, a picture's worth a thousand words. What does this actually look like in real life? On the left-hand side is a 40-foot container. So we passed Teslas on the way in here. You probably also passed some trucks on the road. This is a 40-foot container like you see on trucks on the highway. It's outfitted to hold batteries on the inside. On the right-hand side, if you were to open those doors of the container, that's what you would see. That's a battery rack. So it's just battery modules stacked together. On the top is a battery management system, which is controlling how this battery is operating. This is an example of a battery container. Those same exact racks you could put together in like a warehouse and have a battery building. You can put them, you know, in your house and sort of have a behind the meter project. And we'll talk about that a little bit later too. This is a utility scale. This is a, you know, energy storage container. They're pretty standard. We're going to get into applications later. I'm going to zip through this really quickly. Again, I think pictures are really helpful in thinking about these things. Unfortunately, sometimes renewable energy, it's intermittent. That's why batteries are super helpful in helping, in pairing with renewable energies to create firm capacity, firm energy delivered to your point of interconnect at the grid. So the green line here is your solar production. You could see there's a lot of intermittency on the right-hand side. That's like a cloud that came over or something like that. And you could see your battery is the blue line. That's basically just firming it up in hourly intervals. You can do this also on like a daily interval. So if you envision the way that green curve, it's like trying to look, it's this perfect, what we call in the industry a diurnal, just this perfect little curve. There was no cloud cover. You can firm that to be a perfect diurnal too over the course of the day. You can also take energy from the beginning of the day, bring it to the end of the day. That's kind of what peak shaving is, looks like, or kind of like energy shifting, very similar. When you have, you know, cheap energy in the middle of the night, like 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m., you could charge up your battery and you can release it at the end of the day when your power, when your energy is really expensive to buy, or when you're transmission constrained or when you have an aging asset in your substation, that instead of upgrading that, the cost of upgrading a transformer or like a GSU, for example, might be kind of cost prohibitive. You want to push that out for later. Energy storage can help relieve some of the issues that might be, that you might see because of that. That's Energy Storage 101. I'm going to get on with the presentation.
Excellent, thank Kate. You. Thanks very much. So Gunderson Health Clinics is already working with energy storage, is looking at doing more. And Tim, you're going to walk us through some of the experiences you've had, how you make those decisions, what it is you're looking for, and what you've been getting.
Yeah, so Gunderson recently just...
Step over here if you'd like.
So, Gunderson Health Systems in La Crosse, Wisconsin. We just put a battery in place at our Toma facility. It's really an extension of where we've been going since 2008, working on energy independence. Recently, what we've been starting to do is look internally at individual buildings and trying to make individual buildings energy independent. So we had a Sparta clinic we just opened up a couple years ago. We were able to make that clinic basically an energy independent clinic. It produces about 200,000 kBTUs more energy per year than it consumes, basically through the use of solar and geothermal. But there's no battery at that clinic. So the next clinic we opened up was in Toma. So as we moved into the Toma project, we started looking at, you know, how can we make better use of this solar? We decided to add a battery to the mix. So to do that, what we did is we eliminated the natural gas generator that we were going to put in place. We decided, let's just put a battery there. So we got a 400 kW hour battery that Kate just kind of gave an example for. So that's the size of our tank. It's a 400 kW battery that can discharge at about 200 kW. So, you know, if it was discharging at full capacity, it's essentially a two-hour battery. We designed it so it'd supply about 4 hours backup power for the clinic. So that's kind of where we're at. And then, so our next step is then we believe there's some extra capacity in that battery. So where we're at right now, we're determining how much extra capacity is there. We're going to determine what we're going to do with that extra capacity. Is it going to be peak shaving? You know, is it going to be, you know, optimizing our solar? So we're working with Convergence. They're the company that put the battery in for us, kind of designed the system. We're working with them to determine what the next steps are for that battery so it can deliver some more cost savings for us. So.
Just one question on that, Tim.
Yeah,
the decision to move from a natural gas backup to an energy storage instead, was that controversial inside the company?
No, was it that... wasn't real. I mean, you got to look at your company and what you're doing, and Gunderson's kind of been a leader in that front. So for us, you know, it was a pretty easy decision to eliminate that natural gas generator. You know, there's a lot of maintenance involved with them. You know, you got to go out and test them. You got to, you know, get gas to them. So, you know, for us, it was a pretty easy decision. But, you know, that's going to depend on your company. You know, what's important to you? You know, obviously a battery costs more than a natural gas generator. So, you know, we realize we're kind of pushing out there on the edge, but that's kind of where we want to be. So.
And your lived experience then with the storage unit instead of the natural gas has proved to be a good decision.
Yeah, you know, we test it every month. We go out and we just do a quick test on it, make sure everything's working correctly. And I can actually monitor it on my phone, which is kind of cool. But we got there and we do the test button on it, hit the test to make sure the battery's working correctly, and it transfers very quickly. You don't even notice the lights blink, so that's kind of a cool piece of it. During the installation, we had some fun. Since it was the first kind of battery in the area, when we were getting the elevator inspection completed, it was the first battery, you know, the elevator basically, or the battery basically backs up the elevator. So as the elevator inspector came out, you know, this is the first time he'd seen that kind of use for it. So we had some hiccups and some struggles there, but we were able to work through that with the elevator inspection as well. So,
great. Yeah. Thanks, Tim.
Yeah.
And so, Steve, you're going to walk us through Arch Electric and what your clients are looking at these days in storage.
Yes, I will. I can stand if you guys like me to. Why not? Everybody wants to see me. I'm moving over here. Now you can see me and hear me clearly. Arch Electric's clients want the same thing I think everybody else's clients want here. They want security. They want independence. They want energy when it's most necessary. I found it a little ironic not that long ago that I had an unexpected power outage. They always are. They never call you up to tell you that a storm's going to take out your power. And here I am in the dark using my cell phone flashlight with its renewable battery to dig around to find some batteries to fill my flashlight in the utility room that I forget all about till I need it. We also have clients that want to be good stewards of the environment. They know that using solar energy is a clean form of energy. They know that they're doing their part to contribute to keeping the carbon emissions low, and all of those things are great. They also realize, just like I mentioned with my story, losing a light in the middle of the night, they want security. We've got certain customers that have light support systems that can't ever go out in their home. The only way those things are able to be done is if you've got a guaranteed source of backup power. We've got a couple of customers, people that have been into renewable energy as far as solar and using generators in the past that have had problems with the generators. They run out of gas. They don't always kick on when you need them to run. Generally, when the power is out and the generator goes on, it's the loudest, most annoying thing the neighbors hate. They hate that you're the house with the power running, and they hate that you're the one there making all of the noise. And it's also it's a dirty way to back up your house, especially in the middle of winter. If you're running off a generator, people don't want to go outside with a gas can, try to figure out how to open this thing up, put fuel into it, do the measurements of that stuff. The security of having power when you need it is only as reliable as the system that you're installing to support your solar, and that's where the battery energy storage comes into play. The technology that's driven the small rechargeable battery in my cell phone really has driven the technology to make this scalable to your own home. Could you imagine? We all know about an hour from now, every single electrical outlet in this building is going to have a cell phone charger plugged into it because we're all going to charge our phones back up. Could you imagine if you had to put a new battery into your phone every time the power went down? How many packages of batteries you'd have to carry around and put in your pocket? The advances in small-scale battery capacity is driving the entire scale right up to the Tesla car that passed me on the freeway that can make it to Madison and probably back to Wisconsin. Those are the same things all of our clients want, and they're looking to us for the expert advice. I know I need a battery to keep my solar running when the power goes out. What do I want? What do I need? That's why most of us are here today, and that's what Arch Electric is starting to make a central focus. We want to be able to provide as much detail as easy as possible to understand for our clients so that they know what they're getting is something that's reliable and it's going to work the way they want it to work.
So, quick question.
Yes.
The clients that you are serving today wanting batteries or accepting batteries, are they like Steve's company? Are they all progressive? Are they all thinking we're doing something good for the environment here, we're doing something good for themselves, or is it just a practical decision, it's the cheapest thing to meet my needs?
There's a range of each. Luckily, we have a similar project to what Tim was just discussing with a client that wants to use battery backup instead of a generator on a commercial project. He's an early adopter. He's somebody that's willing to take a risk. He knows that there's probably going to be some uncertainties there. There's a little pushback from the engineering team because they've never seen it done before. And in fact, to the point where they almost sound like, well, okay, our customer wants to use a battery storage backup for this commercial project. That sounds great. So let's entertain them. We'll talk about it for a little bit, and we'll push them on to going back to using a generator like everybody else, because even the experts in the engineering fields, they haven't seen it done before, and they're skeptical. Projects like what Tim is working on, some of our commercial projects that are starting to become more popular, and you'll start to see more battery containers, like Kate mentioned, you're going to see a lot more of that stuff becoming more visible. That's proving that this technology is there, it's ready, it's available. So, yes, it's a cost savings, and it's also people that are conscious of the environment and willing to be the early adopters and be the guys that take the risk.
Just a quick follow-up on the cost. Is it always a cost savings? Where is it penciling out these days? Is it always the best option?
That's the trick and the fine line for everybody in this industry. It's not as easy as saying this is what a gas generator costs, this is what a battery costs. It's a one-to-one trade-off, and buy either one and you're fine. Generally, there's more involved, especially going through some of the permitting and inspections and stuff with batteries, which is going to cost some more time. The benefit cost-wise is that there's more opportunities to offset other costs if you have, and I'm talking commercial level here as well, if you've got a large enough scale battery storage, you're not just sitting there waiting for the power to go out. You've got other opportunities. If you're putting in a gas generator for backup power, that's fine. But there aren't very many businesses, especially office buildings, that are going to run a fuel generator to offset their utility costs during the day. You've got that opportunity with the proper design to be able to offset your power costs with your own solar generation. If you factor those things in, it's not only a cost savings, it's just a smart idea.
Super. Thank you.
Thanks.
Let's bring Kate back. Kate, tell us what Invenergy is doing in storage these days.
Yeah, so I want to focus first on, you know, Wisconsin, that's where we are. Invenergy has a ton of solar development going on in Wisconsin. And so, as I had previously mentioned, I think a lot of what we're focused on with energy storage, therefore, in Wisconsin is really pairing batteries with solar, which is a really great application because, you know, the reality is that, especially in the Midwest, but really all across America, there's a lot of coal plants retiring, for example. Well, coal plants have a lot of disadvantages, but one advantage they have is just firm capacity, right? Like you turn them on and you just get the power that you're trying to get for, you know, as long as you're kind of feeding it. Now, with renewable energy, it's not quite true, right? If you have solar power, you know, when the sun goes down, you can't really generate. So the pairing of batteries and solar help to make sort of a renewable power plant look a lot closer to what a coal plant was able to give you. So we're able to either firm your capacity, firm the power generation from your solar plant throughout the whole day, or you're able to take, you could basically shape your power generation through the day to what you need it to be. So to kind of switch geographical areas, Invenergy is doing a lot of work in the southwest of America. Obviously, there's a huge solar resource down there, like so much solar resource that sometimes the power during the day is like either like $0 or it's like negative pricing for generators because there's just too much. Like they don't need all that solar generation. And so the advantage that provides for energy storage is that you can take a lot of that generation when you really don't need it, and then you could put it to where you do need it. And so that's during the evening when people are coming home, they're turning on their lights, you know, like between, you know, 4 and 7 p.m. or whatever it is for that particular area. So Invenergy is, you know, we're really focused on that. I think a lot of our customers are looking for renewables, and that's a really positive trend that we're seeing. But I think, you know, it's one thing to say, like, you know, hey, we want 100% renewables, but what's that actually going to look like when you have to operate that on your grid? There's intermittency issues that might cause, you know, some, like, grid disturbances. Batteries are able to provide a lot of solutions for that as well. I'm sure a lot of people in here are familiar with the PJM frequency, fast frequency response market. What that really is doing is correcting the really small differences between the generation on the grid and the load from the grid. If those things aren't exactly even, there's a mismatch in frequency. The electric grid operates at 60 hertz, but it's never really purely 60 hertz, right? It's always like plus or minus a certain amount there because, you know, generation and load, it's not always matched. But energy storage is able to correct some of that. Those are some ancillary benefits of energy storage that are kind of hard to quantify, but that are a real advantage that we talk to our customers about. Inverter-based generators are flexible with reactive power, again, with frequency response and things like that. And that's something that we can add in to kind of sweeten the deal when we're talking to our customers about what we're able to offer.
So beyond pairing it up with solar, is Invenergy doing any standalone grid scale battery?
Yeah, absolutely. So the the opportunities I was talking about in the Southwest, for Invenergy, that's storage only. Like, those are standalone storage projects that we're able to it's a kind of an easy business case, right? It's giving the customer what they need. I think elsewhere in the country, there's a lot, like Wisconsin doesn't have the solar resource, unfortunately, that the Southwest does. That's just a reality. But because there is, again, this need for firm capacity, we see some applications for long-duration energy storage, where that would just be a standalone, battery that wouldn't be tied with a renewable energy power plant. Yeah, I think those are the biggest kind of opportunities that we see for standalone.
Great, thanks. So we wanted to move now into policy type issues and obstacles. We've touched on a couple obstacles. I'd ask you all to be thinking about that. I'll hand it over to you in a bit, but just to catch everybody up on macro level, Midwest ISO. If you were in the room last year, we talked about a proceeding where FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, had required all the regional transmission organizations to implement new rules that would allow storage on their systems to wholly participate in their wholesale markets so that they could take energy off the grid, inject energy back onto the grid, and that storage wouldn't be discriminated against as opposed to any other generation kind of resource. It was a year ago. It was still sort of up in the air how those rules were going to come out. November 2019, FERC approved Midwest ISO's new rules. Somebody else has asked for a rehearing of that, but nonetheless, these rules will go into effect in 2022, I think, and they will, they set up a pro forma agreement that an energy storage owner operator would need to sign with Midwest ISO. That says, among other things, we've already reached a separate agreement with our distribution utility for what's going to go on. Other than that, it basically then sets the rules of the road for how you're going to interact with MISO. The tariff provisions that have now been approved completely allow an energy storage unit to, one, take energy off the grid, to put it back on the grid at the locational marginal price, the LMP. So that's huge. It now means that anybody out there can arbitrage, that if you can figure out a way to bring in a battery cheaply enough, grid-sized battery, or actually just anything over 100 kilowatts, 0.1 megawatt, is going to be big enough to be able to play in the energy markets. And if you see the opportunity in the markets now where LMPs are always really high at one point, they're always really low at another point, that difference is going to make enough for me if I'm doing it, 4 hours at a time that I'm selling and I can get 4 hours of good money for a couple of hours of cheap charging. And you can finance your battery system in order to fill that in, that arbitrage, you've got a new opportunity. As more and more people, more and more of you developer types out there think, yeah, I can do that, I can pencil that out, it can work for me, it's going to change the way the grid operates. Eventually, it might lower those prices, the high prices. Maybe you got to want to be an early adopter. One interesting thing that they left open with that is that it doesn't really address co-located batteries with generation. So right now, if you're thinking that you're going to play in the market and also serve my, firm shaping my solar unit, as Kate was talking about, it's not really clear how you can do both. My guess is if you read the rules right and you operate it right, you could do both, but the rules aren't really clearly addressing that co-location battery issue. Another policy type issue in Wisconsin. We are, in terms of energy storage, we're way behind the rest of the nation. At Foley & Lardner, our practice is very much of a national energy practice. I have a lot of storage projects in California and in New York, and those are driven by different things. In New York, it's driven by grid necessities, particularly around the New York City, Long Island area. The matching up load and transmission and bringing in new generation, all those things pose such problems that they've come to realize that the best answer for those is actually bringing on new storage. So there's a market-driven need for storage to sort of respond to the grid situation. In California, it's very much driven by policy decisions, where both the people, their elected politicians, the PUC there, has all sort of made the decision, one, we're going full renewables. Again, with the curve that Kate was showing, because of the way it works, we're going to need storage. It's clearly going to need to be a part of our mix in order to meet our renewable goals. And so they're mandating storage. And so the investor-owned utilities all have faced mandates to bring storage onto their system. And so I'm working with some clients who are responding to those and have won contracts with those, both interconnection and the revenue contracts. So those policy things, Wisconsin isn't yet there. Last year, in 2018, there was, at least through the energy grants that the Public Service Commission has made, there was at least one project, Octopi Brewing. I don't know if anybody drinks their beer. Don't know how good it is. But they won a grant, $250,000, to add in storage with the solar unit that they were bringing on. So there's been at least some activity. In the last round of rate cases in Wisconsin, storage was not really a big issue. I think Northern States Power had something where they were encouraged to have people come forward and talk about storage with them. It wasn't really an issue in the We Energies or WPS rate cases. And in the Cardinal Hickory Creek line, people did, that's been a very controversial thing in Wisconsin, people did try to say that, you know, as an alternative to that, you should look at storage. The commission ended up saying, well, you made some good points, but storage right now doesn't do exactly the same that this big, huge transmission line is going to do, and so we think this big, huge transmission line is needed. Maybe that'll change over the years. So that's some of the stuff going on the policy level, but I'm turning it back over to the panelists now. What kind of obstacles? A couple I heard are that engineers are still a little bit uncomfortable with battery as a solution, but I'm curious as to other obstacles that you're seeing. I just throw it open to anybody.
Anybody want to go first? Well, I can say that in my role at Arch, I don't deal very much on policy, although it's a big part of everything that we do, so I'm in on those discussions. And I agree with Tom's assertion that Wisconsin's a bit behind on adopting some other policies that have already turned out to be a good idea. The owner of Arch Electric has a saying to watch California, because so goes California, so goes the rest of the country. Whether by an interest of an innovation or out of necessity, they have adopted and developed and demonstrated good policies that are good for the rest of the country as well, that we seem to be late to the party for. And we've all got difficulties in one realm or another for one policy or another, and we've got examples already out there where we can say, here's people that have already done something that works. Let's get up to speed here.
Yeah, I mean, I think the, you know, MISO sort of concerns that you had mentioned are one of the challenges that come to my mind first, and I look forward to, you know, all the ISOs, you know, kind of working through how they're going to handle energy storage. But I think what that really signifies is this trend, of course, that people are more and more interested in energy storage. And so the MISOs of the world are sort of forced to say, okay, this is the new future, this is the new reality, and we have to look into this because it's going to affect how we do our studies, how we put in, you know, our queue positions and things like that. But, you know, I think another sort of symptom of that trend is that, you know, on the utility scale, when Invenergy goes to permit projects, you know, in the past, I think people were like, oh, batteries. Okay, I don't know. Okay, fine. Yeah, cool. But now, I mean, there's much more interest in that because it's becoming more and more popular. I think, you know, even, you know, I think people are just talking about it more. There's more awareness of batteries and what a whole system is, and how it's going to, you know, affect your, you know, your area. And so as we get, as we involve the, you know, authorities having jurisdictions, you know, first responders, for example, you know, they're more educated, and it's good. It's a trend that we need to see. So I think, like, you know, Steve was saying, when people want backup power, they'll just use a diesel generator. Well, those are so well understood. You can go to Home Depot and just buy a diesel generator, right? Like, people don't ask many questions about that. And I think in the same way as, you know, batteries can provide the same backup power and service as a diesel generator can, but it's just a new and emerging market. And I think there's a lot of education going around for both end users and, you know, authorities having jurisdiction to get people up to speed on, you know, what a battery is and what they need to know, you know, if there were ever something that an event that they had to respond with a battery.
Yeah, to me, you know, essentially as a building operator, I think, you know, I'm excited about storage. Essentially because of all the doors that it opens, it gives you a lot more that you can do with your energy on site. I look at it as kind of like the Swiss Army knife of storage on our facilities. You know, it's got a lot of different things you can do with it. So to me, that's the exciting piece. I know there's a lot of, obstacles we're gonna have to overcome and as we move forward, but, it's kind of fun to push out there on the edge, so.
I promised we would have time at the end for questions, and we have time for questions. So the first guy with that that sweater in this third row was the first hand I saw, and then we'll leave our volunteer to pass the mic around.
In any technology, it's always a question of when you jump in, and particularly the rapidly evolving technology. And could you talk about what you know about where we are in terms of both the changing battery options and also the changing the control options in terms of being smart, connected to the grid and storage and the time and use rates, things like that. Where are we and what's coming in the next year or 2 years or 3 years?
Anybody want to address that?
Sure. It seems like we're early in that market, but the reality is there's a lot of options out there. How much control you want over your particular system really depends on how picky you are on being very aware of what your energy use is. You know, everybody has an app now on their phone that says your house is using this much power, your battery's using that much power. You can get as detailed as home automation will let you get. I mean, that technology is pretty advanced right now. It's kind of piecemeal at this point, where there's different companies that specialize in maybe load control, and another company that specializes in a battery, another company that makes a particular panel, and then there's companies like us that integrate that stuff together. What you're going to see more of, especially with companies like Generac getting into this market, they're going to begin to integrate a lot more of those controls into one system. Obviously, they want to be the name that you go to for that sort of a thing. The one thing that's not going to change is the battery capacities are going to continue to go up. Wherever you're at today, and right now the energy capacity of the lithium-ion batteries per size compared to the old lead acid and a number of other options, it's just remarkable how much more power you can get out of them in a smaller amount of space. And the one thing that the engineers for those companies and the designers are doing is they're keeping an eye on the future for being able to add to existing systems. So if you think you're an early adopter now and you're getting into the market and then next week there's going to be a new and better system out there and you're out of luck because you're still paying for the old one, it doesn't work that way. You'll be able to continually add on and advance the controls of your systems as much as you're interested in.
Thanks, Steve.
I just make a suggestion. There's a lot of people standing. If you have empty seats next to you, could you move in so the standing people can get an end seat?
Hi. I have a question on just the costs. You showed a 40-foot container, 1.5 megawatt per hour, 3 megawatts. What would be the cost of something like that? And then the maintenance costs, like do you have to replace those batteries every 5 years, 10 years, never?
Great question. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, there's, widely publicized reports on the precipitous decline in cost per, like, sort of dollar per kilowatt hour for energy storage, and I would encourage you to look at Bloomberg or something like that for those. What used to be, like, $300 per kilowatt hour is now, like in the very near future will approach, like, you know, $150 or something like that. So it's been this really rapid decline. So I appreciate what Steve said in that 40-foot container. What the one that I showed you is like one of our sort of legacy systems, and I think that container had 1.5 megawatt hours in it, but like the containers now can hold almost up to like 3 megawatt hours. So, you know, it is, to the questioner's point, you know, it is rapidly evolving in that way. And as far as the maintenance goes, so battery maintenance, it's actually, like, in a lot of ways kind of similar to solar maintenance. It's really kind of inverter-driven. And the maintenance on an inverter, it's very light. You know, it's not many, you know, person hours per year. It's a lot of, like, changing filters, a lot of visual inspections, and it just does not take a lot of time. Now, as far as on the battery side of things, at least, you know, for Invenergy, a lot of the maintenance, you know, lowercase m, that we perform has a lot to do with monitoring, right? And we run reports to make sure our batteries are performing as they're expected to perform. But that's all done remotely. Like, we have a headquarters in Chicago, so it's all done sort of in Chicago. Typically, you know, like, as far as replacement batteries, there are, like, anomalies that happen, right? Like, we've replaced a handful of batteries just because you just kind of get a lemon in there. But they're really meant to run sort of, like, for an extended lifetime. So, you know, some batteries, it depends on the battery supplier, but a lot of them are saying, like, hey, it's a 20-year life, in which case, you know, that obviously extends your life. What used to be maybe, like, 10 years is now running out to 20 years, which is a, you know, significant advantage. So I would not say that replacement of batteries is something that, you know, Invenergy necessarily takes into account as far as our O&M for those first 20 years.
You just go ahead.
Just shout out your questions at the same
before.
Time.
Yeah. Yeah, right here. Yeah.
This concerns, is this on?
Yes, sir.
Concerns materials. As the world scales up using more and more batteries, sometimes we hear, is there enough lithium or whatever else goes into those batteries? Anybody have comments about that?
My understanding is that the lithium deposits that we're largely tapping right now are mostly coming from China, and that they're significant enough that the cost in the last 10 years has gone down a remarkable percent, and that there's just as when new oil reserves are found, there's people out there looking. And there are lithium deposits that haven't even been touched yet all over the world that are significant. The future forecast is the lithium-based batteries, different versions, different chemical mixtures, but primarily lithium, is going to be around for a while, and there's a lot of it.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, sounds good. And catch his eye while the next question's going on. So you
can you speak to alternative storage types aside from lithium ions, such as molten silica or hydrogen solar combination, other things that are out there? We talked a lot about lithium ion, but every time we come to a show, I don't hear anybody talking about the next thing aside from lithium.
The company that I did most of my development work with had our own chemistry department, and we were doing different battery technologies, primarily electrochemical. But there are other storage options like that. They just have not proven economical enough or a large enough demand to beat out, particularly on the residential side, to beat out the cost. You know, the hydrogen cell batteries, I think those things are fantastic. There's some really good things about that technology. It just isn't expanding enough. It doesn't have enough of a business interest to make it feasible. So generally, the market is driving the customer to the lithium battery, and that's the customer demand we support. You're going to see some of those things maybe on a larger scale. Maybe some utilities will experiment with that if they can find a way to make it economical. But for the foreseeable future, you're going to see a lot of lithium-ion batteries.
Yeah, I agree on the utility side. And just to add something to that, I think, you know, flow batteries are increasing in popularity, so I do think we'll see more of a market presence there. But the reason why lithium-ion batteries are so popular is because of this precipitous decline in price, and that is largely driven by the electric vehicle market. So, like, in some ways you can think about it, like, if that battery new technology can't go in a car, like, it's probably just not going to enjoy the same, like, price decrease that lithium-ion batteries are enjoying right now.
Well, they're also one of the most efficient technologies out there for storage. You can cram a lot of power in a small space with lithium ion. Everybody wants a smaller battery. You know, I don't want the old cell phone that looked like a military issue phone from Vietnam. My phone can get as small as it does because they can cram so much power into there. The technology is winning out for that reason as well.
This will probably be our last question then.
So I work with homeowners to install solar on their homes, rooftop.
I suspect many of you have had to feel the it's not fair basis of thought from a homeowner, which is, hey, I want to get totally off grid. How do you guys respond to that type of question?
Believe it or not, that is, it's more common than a lot of people think. When I got into the commercial side of solar and storage out of the development side, I didn't expect that there were that many residential customers that were interested in off-grid opportunities. Until recently, there haven't been that many systems that were focused primarily on off-grid. I mean, when the power goes out and your battery kicks in, you are off-grid. You're only off-grid until the power comes back on. And those systems are kind of leaning on the utility to kick back in as a backup for their systems. It takes a lot more design work and a little bit more focus if you want to be entirely off-grid. And quite frankly, a lot of the utilities don't like that idea, and they're not really... I don't want to make any enemies with the utility company, so if anyone here from the utility, please step outside. I mean, we essentially are partners with the utilities, and at times we butt heads. But there are systems. Tesla has been running a pilot off-grid program in California now for almost 2 years. They've got several projects that are 100% off-grid. There's no utility on site if you want it. As mentioned in earlier, Mr. Butts had mentioned that Arch Electric had teamed up to do a co-op off-grid system for Alice's Garden is the name of the project in Milwaukee. It's a 100% off-grid system. There is no utility power there. We have a water filtration system. We provide power for lights and for a sound system. They can even put a band there. That entire system stands 24 hours a day, even through the winter, running entirely off-grid. So the possibilities are there. And the more people see it become successful, the more it's going to become an option.
So some final thoughts. The I can see a future. We're future-focused at the Renew Conference this year. I can see a future where lots of people have electric vehicles. They plug them in at night. They plug them in during the day. If the utility handled things right, the utility could be there and could be working with this whole fleet of electric batteries that everybody will have, and the utility could do what it needs to do in order to use that energy when it needs it and to deliver that energy when the cars need it, and everybody could be happy. But that takes a forward-thinking utility. It takes forward-thinking policymakers. It takes forward-thinking public. We're not there yet in Wisconsin. Maybe someday we'll be there. I want to thank all of you for your kind attention during today's panel. I thought it was a great session. I want to thank our panelists. We'll all be here in case you want to chat or ask your questions afterward. But let's thank our panelists.